thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
It's the Urban Sports Scene. We back. In effect, live, son.
Just made it.
Ice Willie too just made it. It's good, though. It's all good. It's all family up in here. You know what I mean? We don't CP time anyway. Always.
Pretty much.
Always every
You're
day.
You're Nigerian, so that adds another 15.
That adds a whole. We do
all
parties.
CP time.
You know, we do parties and stuff late. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
party starts at 9.
It's wild.
We don't get there till 1.
Yeah, we don't get to 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't shut that. We shut that thing down.
Pretty much.
Because Will's Nigerian. He doesn't know that yet, though. Anyway, it's the Urban Sports Scene. I'm glad you're all here listening to another Tuesday. Anything? Well, what happened in your side of town? Anything special?
No, just did some bike riding, and I did go to the game on Saturday.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
You went to the
marathon 18 inning game. Yes, I did.
You did? Oh, tell me how that went.
It was nice. It was a great experience. I went with a friend. She had tickets to the Nats game in the Diamond Club. That's like one.
That's like what, the VIP? That's like the champagne room?
No. No, the President's Clubs. You know when you're watching the game in those blue seats?
No, I've never been to Nats Bowl.
When you're watching the game and you know the pitcher, you know when you see behind the batter?
Yeah, okay, got
those
you.
Blue seats, that's the President's Club. Like one section up is the Diamond Club. Got to eat, drink as much as I wanted. Well, they cut you off at a certain point when it comes to the alcohol, which really sucks.
Because that was
an 18 inning game, but I didn't stay through the whole 18 innings.
So you was one of those fans that left
early?
Well, no,
I'm not one of those fans. The game started at 5. It didn't end until midnight. I'm one of those fans that got fed up and left at around 10:30.
Oh, okay. I'm just saying. So you were one of those people that everybody was like, wow, you didn't show your Nats, you know, your Nats support staying through the whole game.
I was in there strong supporting the Nats, and you know, I wish they had pulled it out, but it was still a very close game, and I'm a little bit upset at Matt Williams with his decision.
Yeah, my boy Ray, we'll talk about that too.
Okay,
but my boy Ray, he was upset. He was upset as well. Ray, who's will always be a member of the Urban Sports Scene. He has been on the show for a while, but will always be a member anyway. But let's get into the logistics real quick. Every show is dedicated to my homie Big Ron, who passed away on July 26th. We have a fund for him. Please, if anything, you know, if you want to submit anything, any type of funds, it doesn't matter how much. No one's being greedy or whatnot. The website is www.gofundme.com/CBT730. That's CBT730. So, if anything, you can donate whatever. It's all appreciated, so we would appreciate it, and it's just for his family and whatnot. So I'm happy, and I'm actually feel blessed for the individuals who did have supported Ron's family within this fund. We raised over close to $1,000, which was cool. So I'm appreciative, for real, honestly, God bless you all for doing it.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Okay. The Orioles swept the Tigers.
Do we really have to start with that?
Yeah, we're starting with the Orioles.
Okay.
Yeah, we're starting with the Orioles. So don't get it twisted. We got our business done early. Early, son.
We?
Early. Yeah, we. I'm a we
Do
dude.
Do you own the team?
No, I don't
Do
own it.
Do you have ownership in
the
team?
It's a we thing with me and the Orioles.
Nah, I'm just kidding with you, man.
You know what I mean? HTS. Yeah. All right.
You've been down for deep.
I've been deep. HTS.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Home team sports. Who aren't familiar, it was the previous incarnation of Masson Network.
There was like Comcast Sports. Actually, truth be told, it was Comcast Sportsnet. That's what it really is, though.
Okay.
Comcast Sportsnet is really like HTS.
Yeah.
Because it's basically on the same cable channel. You really want to break it down. But it's wild, you know. It was a good feeling, you know, see it as an adult to get to appreciate it. Like,
yeah, because last time you didn't even have – did you go through puberty last time they went?
97. To yeah, I went through puberty.
Okay.
97.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was
it's been
going
a long time.
Yeah,
been
I was going time. Through the motions. but, yeah, you know, as an adult to appreciate it, you know, there are teams I've always wanted to see successful as an adult and appreciate that moment. The Redskins in 91. You know, obviously I was a kid.
You were like 10 years old.
10 years old, exactly. And I couldn't appreciate it, you know what I mean?
Right.
Obviously, but, you know, I'm still waiting on that day when they can just do it for me this season.
Keep waiting.
Not this season, but in the upcoming seasons, because this season doesn't look that promising. But anyway, but to see the Orioles do it, to sweep the Tigers, a team that everybody, all the experts had them beating us. Even though we were the overall seed. No, overall, sorry. Between the two teams, we're the better seed.
You were the number two seed.
There's number two seed. Yeah, exactly.
The Tigers were the number three seed.
We we didn't get like we didn't get respect. Our pitching staff didn't get any respect. And I always stated like I'm not sure of the numbers, but I want to say towards like the end of June, towards July, the Orioles have had one of the better pitching staffs in baseball. I think second to the Nats. So starting pitching. So like we didn't get the respect that we deserve. And to go into that series, go against the big bad Miguel Cabrera, who was playing on the edge for some strange reason, talking trash the whole series, which was only three games, so he's out now. To knock that team out.
Go ahead, stick your chest
out. I am. I feel good about myself. To knock out three Cy Young Award winners, which the announcers on TBS kept saying, like, you know, like we weren't supposed to be there. To knock this team out in three straight games with a powerful bullpen, I felt good. And all praise to Buck Showalter, because he's just an evil genius. You know, we talk about, you know, a mastermind, an evil genius. This guy knows how to manage his bullpen, knows how to manage his players. I mean, for instance, when Bud Norris for game three was named a starter, a lot of people, even myself, was like, why? How come it's not Miguel Gonzalez? Miguel Gonzalez has been clutch the whole season. He deserves to make it. He's been pitching hot down the stretch. And Buck went with his gut feeling, and Norris shut down the Tigers. And then he used that bullpen, even in the ninth inning. Folks were like, wow, why walk? I've got a third baseman for the Detroit. Why walk him? You have a man on second in Martinez. You have the winning run on first. Boom, set up the play for Zach Britton for a double play to win the game. So I'm ecstatic, man. I feel good. I think this team is showing potential to do some special things. And all praise to Buck, and I feel good for players like Nick Markakis. Well, I definitely feel good for Nick Markakis, who missed out 2 years ago because CeCe Sabathia threw inside and broke his wrist, and he couldn't play in the postseason. I'm glad now like he's getting the opportunity to play in the postseason and be an impact player. So this is good for Baltimore, and good for all the individuals back in the day who watched HTS.
Well, I'll say this. I'm happy for the Orioles players and manager Buck Showalter. I'm happy for the fans. I'm happy for the city of Baltimore. I'm not happy for Peter Angelos. one of the worst owners in baseball and sports.
Yeah, that Masson thing.
A little bit. Y'all deserve it. Just a tad bit. I don't think when the series was announced, I don't think if you told anyone that the Orioles would sweep the Tigers 3-0, then you add on top that that the starting three pitchers would be David Price, Scherzer, and Verlander. No one would have believed you. But Buck Showalter, he worked his magic in the last inning, unlike Matt Williams in game two.
Which we'll be talking about.
Yeah, we'll talk about. But it just goes to show you that you can't follow the book during the playoffs. You know, it's a total crapshoot. You have to go with your gut. Even though, you know, the sabermetrics is part of baseball right now. You know, you have so many general managers and managers who use it for the purposes of matchups and also for predicting probability of who can get who out, which is matchups. I don't know why I kind of said the same thing.
It's okay. It's all good.
It happens, though.
It happens.
It just goes to show you that baseball is a game when it comes to managers. You have to use your gut. You have to go with the feeling. And Buck Showalter did that, and that's why the Orioles advanced, swept the Tigers 3-0. And I know that everyone in the city of Baltimore and people also who were down here who were fans are looking forward to seeing them match up with the Royals in a 7-game series. And it should be interesting, especially with them getting Chris Davis back. Game four?
Depending, still 8 games, so you got to do 3 games. They won 3 games, so he has 5 more games.
Okay. So, you know, there's a possibility for Chris Davis to be back in the lineup, which will give them even more power, give them another bat. You know, you can never have too many guys who are swinging the bat well in postseason, as we've seen in other series. And, you know, just kudos to the Orioles.
So real quick, you mentioned the Royals, and we'll get to Chris Davis too, but we mentioned the Royals. How do you feel like the Royals knocked off the Angels, basically swept the Angels as well? How do you see this Baltimore Orioles team matching up against the Kansas City Royals?
I think they match up pretty well. Aggressive base running is what the Royals use to get rid of the Angels, which could be a problem for the Orioles. But I think they match up pretty well. Orioles bats will be the main focus of this series, but also How do the Royals counter and produce runs also? So it's definitely be an interesting series, a series that I look forward to looking to, and hopefully, you know, it's just one half of a potential BW Parkway World Series.
For me, I think the Royals matchup, it's gonna be a good battle because the Royals will bring into they're gonna bring to the table, like Will said, a team that runs the base as well, that's gonna be aggressive on the base path. Now, granted, you know, in the regular season they didn't show a lot of power, but against the Angels they showed power. I mean, against the Angels they showed power. So it's gonna be interesting to see because the Orioles are a team with power who do drive in runs, who do score a lot of runs at times when they are hot. And we do see the Orioles pitching staff has improved. The similarities these two teams do have is they both have strong bullpens, two of the better bullpens in the American League. So in that regard, you know, when the Orioles or the Royals, when they get to the sixth, seventh inning, it could be tight. And we're talking about a game, we can see a lot of extra inning games. But it's all going to be dependent on the starters. The Orioles starters have to pitch as well as they did against the Tigers. And if they can do that, this team can definitely get to the World Series. The Orioles have the advantage with the bats. I mean, I think that's well known. And they will be hosting games in Camden Yards. In all honesty, the Orioles have home field advantage throughout the rest of the postseason due to the fact the Angels allow. And we do know since the American League won the All-Star game, so they're going to have home field advantage throughout the postseason. The Orioles, which I think
is the dumbest thing.
I know, but don't get me started on that. I totally agree with you. But the Orioles probably would have the best record anyway because they have a better record. Well, the Nats and the Orioles have similar records. But anyway, the Orioles, what they do have for them on their side is they are familiar with a bunch of pitchers on the Royals team. Jeremy Guthrie was an Oriole. Big game, James Shield was played for the Rays. The Orioles have seen him a number of times. So there are some long familiarity. Damn, I'm having an issue today, boy.
You been drinking before you got on the mic?
Nah, I had some wine yet last night, though. Okay. Plum wine, that thing like that.
Yeah, plum wine. You got to mix plum wine with sake. Isn't it about the same thing, though? Mm-mm.
Mix them separately.
Mix them together.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think I'll do that.
You should.
I think I'll go to Total Wine and do that.
You should try it.
I think I will try that.
Yeah.
I think I will. I definitely will try it. But I see in that regard, I think the Orioles – have an advantage on this team just because of the power. I mean, just to wrap it up, just because of the power issue of it. And I believe that their pitching staff will do a good job against this aggressive Rays team. Now, it's going to be
Royals.
I was about to say Braves?
Yeah, he said
Royals. Oh, good God. Royals team, excuse me.
It happens, man.
But it's going to be interesting to see who Buck makes active on the playoff roster for the ALCS because there are some guys who I think could make the roster like a Brian Mattis because the Royals have some good left-handed hitters, so he would be useful in this series. Real quick, we talked about Chris Davis. You heard rumors about Chris Davis. About how the players would have to vote him in for him to be on the roster, which is I think it's a bunch of BS. Chris Davis.
Why do you think it's a bunch of BS?
I don't think it's true. According to Rock.
Well,
according to Rock, the Orioles beat writer, he never heard that, and that's the Orioles beat. That's the guy who follows the Orioles thoroughly.
I can see it from the perspective of because you know play your share of the playoff pie, so you know you might not want you wasn't here. You wasn't with me shooting in the gym.
Oh, okay. You talking about yeah, that's true. I mean, in that regard, everybody wants to win a championship.
Yeah, everybody.
If he's gonna help you win a championship, you ain't worried about
totally
that.
I totally agree, but you know, some people might take the "you wasn't with me shooting in the gym." You know, you don't deserve this.
Depends on how much that playoff pie is, though.
Yeah,
you know, you're gonna win a lot of money. You get a lot of money for winning the World Series, don't you?
Yeah, I think you get a sizable amount.
Yeah, I'm all about that money. What's gonna get me the most amount of money?
True. That's what I'm worried about. I totally agree with that.
You know what I mean? Anyway, so if Chris Davis does get on this team, what position should he play? Should he play first base or third base? Right now you got Pierce playing first, and you have Flaherty playing third.
Chris Davis isn't the best fielder in the world.
No, he's a good first baseman.
That's why I was going to say you stick him back at first base. You don't put him at third. Put him back at first.
Well, you know, I thought about that too, actually. putting him at first base. But Pierce is swinging the bat so well. Davis did start as a third baseman years ago in his career, so I play him at third. Just that way, we keep the dangerous bats in the lineup. Flaherty's a guy though who has come up with big hits. I'm starting to be a Ryan Flaherty fan, but anytime you can have, to me, an offense that can intimidate any pitching staff, I'm all for that. You know, people always talk about defense. I understand defense is big. I'm not knocking defense, but anytime you can put up a lineup that can intimidate people, I'm for that more than anything in the postseason.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? So, but I'm going to use this on our Facebook page, but on a Facebook group called Baltimore Orioles, matter of fact, Facebook group that I'm in. Lauren Simmons said she would have him at third or pinch hit. My man Carl said third base. My man Dennis Ray said if the team votes him back on, which, like I said, he's going to be voted on if they are voting. He's the starting first baseman for the Baltimore Orioles, is he not? He hits for power, and although he's struggling at the plate, he has a .252 batting average with 7 home runs in 31 games against the Royals, so he could help a lot. I think the best option though is to play him at third base because 1, he's fresh; 2, he's very serviceable, and and 3, Steve Pierce is playing too good to sit on the bench and has earned his spot on the roster. I mean, earned his spot on the starting team. So I totally agree with all of that. But, you know, he should play first base because he's a starter, right? But the postseason is so important. You're already losing Manny Machado at third base. You're losing that bat. So you're trying to make sure you add offense in the lineup. Now we're going to lose something defensively, but at the same time, offense is very important. You know what I mean? Especially against a team that plays small ball in the Royals. You don't want to play their game. Stay to your game.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So
dance with the one that brought you here.
Exactly. I wouldn't read all these, but there's a lot of them. So, but anyway, thanks for the comments on Facebook. We appreciate it. I guess I'm going to go to one more Oriole thing, and then we can go to the Nationals.
This is Oreo overkill, but go ahead.
Hey, don't worry about it. When your team gets to the NLCS for you, then you can holler at me. Right now, you're struggling. 9:00, the Nats will be playing against the Giants. Hopefully, Gio Gonzalez does his thing.
There's no hopefully.
Then they can get to game 5. But right now, we're going to talk about the Orioles.
There'll be a game 5 in D.C. on Friday.
Because the Orioles is a given. They play Friday at 8:00.
Okay.
They know who they're playing.
Hey.
And they're set up. They're rested. They're ready to go. They did their job.
Yep. Yep.
All right.
I can't argue.
Nats were number one seed, and they're struggling against they're struggling against the wild card team. I'm sorry. Let's continue with the Orioles real quick.
Oh no. Go ahead.
But anyway, Miguel Gonzalez, he didn't play in the first series. I'm thinking that because he didn't play in the first series and he pitched so well in the regular season and Chen got bombed out in game 2 even though the Orioles won, I'm thinking Miguel Gonzalez will be probably starting in game 2. That's my prediction. Tillman will take game 1, Miguel Gonzalez in game 2. And then maybe you'll see Bud Norris in game 3 and then Chen in game 4. Maybe you have Chen in game 3. That's my prediction.
I mean, it's possible. You know, Buck Showalter, he's not a guy that goes traditionally, so he's not going to follow a script. So that possibly could happen, you know, when in the ALCS.
O's fans, if you're out there listening, the phone lines are on, and the number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. If you want your voice to be heard, call in, and we can talk about some Orioles. But right now, we're about to move up to 295, up on 295.
Down 295.
Up 295. Dang, you know what? Down, up, down. Yeah. Down to 95?
Yeah, down to 95.
I'm always messing this up. Will does this perfectly. He's like the map quest out here. We're down 295. We're going Nats news. Nats news. The Nats. Oh, am I getting a phone call? Excuse me. I think it's the phone call.
Hey, you can talk first.
Okay. Well, while Wally sets it up for us to, we have a caller coming in. Okay, so, yeah, just stalling out for a little bit while Wally does his thing on the engineering side to set up a phone call. So,
they
hung up? Well,
he's
I'm gonna call
the person back.
Yeah, call. While they call him back. But yeah, as you stated, tonight, game 4 in San Francisco, on the mound, Gio Gonzalez for the Nats. I forgot.
Your point?
Huh?
So you forgot what?
Who's on the mound for the Giants?
Oh, Vogelsong.
Vogelsong. So it should be interesting. 9 p.m. I'm very excited. Can't wait to, you know, as soon as the show is over, I'm going to run back home or run to our local establishment where we go watch the game. So it should be interesting.
Still trying to find out this, trying to call this individually.
Okay.
So well, hold on. Hello, it's Travis. Okay, this is, you've been the Urban Sports thing. Hold on, put you on right now.
All right.
How you doing? All right, hold on.
Producer, patch him through.
He's on.
Hello?
Yeah.
Travis?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so you're on with the Urban Sports thing, so what do you want to add on?
Well, I commented on your thing on Facebook. I wouldn't put him nowhere. Man, we're winning. Why? Don't fix something that's not broke.
Yeah.
And I was sort of disappointed with Chris Davis this season anyway. It's like he was swinging for defenses. He wasn't swinging for a base hit. And he got a lot of strikeouts.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I thought about that myself. Even when he got suspended, I was thinking to myself, like, okay, Chris Davis is he's going to be out. We're going to have individuals who are actually not going to strike out, who may be more patient at the plate or will have more contact. So I was actually a fan of it initially, but then I thought to myself, well, that is like 35. That's a home run guy off the field that can intimidate pitchers.
But anybody on our lineup can intimidate pitchers.
That's true.
I mean, our lineup is just deadly, man.
That's true.
I mean, Diaz is a good hitter. Scope's a good hitter. I mean, everybody. There's nobody on our team that's not really a good hitter.
Yeah. I'll say this power hitter. Like, Scope, well, eventually I feel like will be a good hitter. Right now he's more predominantly a power hitter who strikes out as well. But I agree with you. Diaz has been surprising to me. That's a guy who's been so surprising.
Oh man, I'm telling you, it's great. I'm 40 years old, man. I've been watching the Orioles since as long as I can remember. Man, to have them be in the postseason as far as they are, man, there ain't nothing like it.
Oh, I'm with you. This is an exciting time for me. I was screaming up and down, bouncing off the walls when they beat the Tigers. So I was
at the game Friday, and I can't explain that feeling. I mean, my people ask me, well, how was the game? I was like, man, I can't explain how the game was. There's no other feeling like it I've ever had in my life.
Oh, yeah. Well, Travis, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it, man.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, man, you guys have a good one. Go O's.
Go O's. Stay blessed.
All right, have a good one, man. Well, thanks, Travis, for giving us your insight on when we discussed the Orioles.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
O's talk, baby. We out O's here. Talk.
Yeah, he's a sports fan just like us.
Exactly.
You know?
O's talk. We are
any out other
here.
Sports fans who are out there, please feel free to give us a call at
the number's 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. I'm going to be quicker now when it comes to the phone calls.
Okay, all right, man.
I wasn't prepared because my phone was in the case.
Hey, man. It doesn't matter.
You know, I was playing around. But we're going to Nats talk.
Yeah, like I said, like we were talking about, GL's on the mound tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern time, 6 p.m.
Western time.
West Coast time.
That's just West Coast time. Pacific.
Game 4, very important game. They need this game in order to bring it back to D.C. for Game 5. I personally believe that if Gio starts to get flustered and become emotional, they'll have a short leash on him with Tanner Roark.
Of course.
And I also think when they win Game 4 and they bring it back to D.C. For Game 5, I don't think Matt Williams doesn't strike me as the type of guy that's going to go off the cuff and is going to go back with Zimmerman. I think he'll go with Strasburg, but he'll have a very short leash also.
For me, I just want to talk about Game 3. It just shows how clutch Doug Fister was in that series in that game. That's a guy that
You put Fister up against your number one, against their number one, and you look what he does.
Yeah.
Even though one thing that kind of gives me a little bit of trepidation is you needed that era to produce two runs.
Hey.
Well, I know, you know, runs are runs.
But
it just goes to show that the bats in the Nats lineup during this series haven't been as potent and as explosive. You know, you had Anthony Rendon, what was it, in game
the game two.
I think he was like four for five. He was
killing.
He was at one point, like
4 for 7 or something.
Yeah, at one point I know he was 4 for 4.
Uh-huh.
Denard Span was able to get on base game three. But, you know, you need him consistently to get on base because he's one of those guys with his speed that poses a threat to the pitcher, you know, to the pitcher and kind of is a distraction for the pitcher while he's on the mound.
Yeah. Again, like Fister proved to me that maybe he should have been starting in game two and Zimmerman should have been starting in game one. He's a guy who's been consistent. I mean, even though Strauss down the stretch looked good, but if you look at it, Zimmerman, I've always said that Zimmerman is their best pitcher. Then you got Fister at 2, Strauss at 3. Maybe they would be up 2-0.
Instead of being that's possible. But, you know.
And Strauss didn't pitch terrible game one.
He didn't pitch terrible at all. It's just that one of the things that's always hindered Strasburg in his starts is run support. And, you know, during the regular season, towards the end of the season, the back end of the season, he started to get more run support, get better run support. But at the beginning of the season, that were a lot of his errors, a lot of his troubles and frustrations. He wasn't getting a lot of run support, which he didn't get in game one.
Yeah, so we'll see. He didn't get any run support. But, again, you see Zimmerman and you see Fister, and they just shut down the opposition. Like, these individuals can't get started against Strauss. Though, again, he didn't pitch bad. He pitched good. He wasn't dominating.
Yeah, he didn't have his ace stuff, as you say, per se. But also, one guy is starting to back it up, you know, with everyone's been saying about him. And he has produced when he's been on the field. That's Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper's had two monster home runs during this series. The first one in game one, that towering shot, 440 feet. And then you also had last night, game three, where he almost hit the coat, almost hit it all the way out of the park in San Francisco. And everyone knows that San Francisco isn't exactly a hitter's park.
No, it's not at all.
So, you know, that just goes to show he just needs to be consistent. We need him. I need Ian Desmond to stop swinging at every damn thing he sees.
That's Ian Desmond, though.
Yeah, it is.
That's Ian Desmond.
You got to live. But at the same time, you got to understand the stakes and you got to. Yeah. Show some patience at the plate.
Because of the postseason.
Yeah,
I mean,
pretty much.
But I mean, I experienced this 2 years ago with the Orioles. You know, that's their first postseason. Obviously, this is not the Nats' first postseason. But sometimes when you have free swingers, they don't care. And the Orioles, we had free swingers against the Yankees, and them dudes just didn't care. And you wanted them to take pitches. So Ian Desmond, you probably want him to, but if it's in his nature, he's just not going to happen.
Yeah, but sometimes you got to understand the moment and you got to kind of tailor it, bring it in a little bit. But
anyway, let's go. You mentioned Matt Williams, his foul up with taking out Jordan Zimmerman. I mean, after, you know, Jordan Zimmerman got two, he had two outs, he walked one, and then all of a sudden Matt Williams said he was in trouble. So that's why he took him out.
To put it in context, at that time, I think Zimmerman had shut out 18 straight pitches. I think it was like 16 to 18 straight pitches without walking anyone. So he was still throwing, I think, in the low 90s after that second out. I don't understand why you want to bring in Storen, who's, I'm not going to say ice cold, but when you have a guy who's hot, who's feeling it, let him finish. It's one out. One out, and he had pitched himself out of trouble already. So you let that guy, let him go, get that one out, and then we all walk off, and it's 1-1, and everyone's happy. But the story, the narrative changes if the Nats lose this series, because then everyone will be talking about Matt Williams, a rookie manager who made a rookie mistake.
It's called messing with church's money. All right. He messed up. He did. He messed up. He had to say
It was a boneheaded.
That was a mess. He messed up. I don't want to like go in detail where he just messed up.
But to me, I think, and it just goes to show that he, you know, even though he's a good manager, you can still see that he's inexperienced because he walked up. He walked out there with so much command without even talking to Jordan Zimmerman. Not even looking in his eyes and asking him, "Can you get this last out?" He didn't even give him the chance. At least give Jordan Zimmerman a chance to be like, coach, I got this one. One out. Mm-hmm. You got to look the man in the eyes, say, can you get us this one out? And if you believe him, then you talk to Jose Lobaton, who was and you ask him, how's it, you know, when it's when it's hitting the glove, how does it feel? And he says he's still throwing hard. Then you just say, go get us this one out.
All right. So real quick, Drew Storm gave up a run again in a game in game three. Right?
Correct.
Gave a run.
Yeah, almost ish my pants.
Okay. Now we're in game four. The situation emerges. Do you have him close out the game? Do you have Drew Storen close out the game?
Me personally, I still think the playoffs of 2012 are still in Drew Storen's head. This is the time for Rafael Soriano. I know that towards the end he was very shaky, not the best at all, downright terrible. But his demeanor on the mound, Rafael Soriano was able to shake off any disappointment relatively quick and refocus and come back and get you outs. He's a veteran. He's been on this stage before. I'm not saying you have a short leash on Storm, but me personally, I think this is the reason why you brought in Soriano. Go out there. You know, when Storm starts to look shaky, starts to look timid, bring in Soriano and just see what can happen. This is why you paid the guy.
Well, I would play Storm. I'm a Storm fan. I like his game, but I agree with you to a certain extent. I do think he's overthinking things. What happened to him against the Cardinals a couple years ago still plays in his mind. And he just goes out there and performs. Just throw strikes. Do what you do. All right, if they hit your stuff, they hit your stuff. But at least you know you went out. You went out your way, like, you know, like Frank Sinatra.
Yeah,
you know, in my way. You know what I mean?
He tenses up. So, at the first sight of trouble, it's all you see him cursing to himself, his body language, his demeanor. Soriano is just kind of like aloof, like I'll get him with the next one.
Yeah, and I feel that Storen is a better closer than, or has better stuff than Soriano. So he should just have confidence in himself and just do the job. But I agree with you. A little bit of what happened 2 years ago is in him, and that's why. I feel like he gave him runs in that game, game three. But it gave him a run in game three. But hopefully he got the final out, so that may have a trickle down effect. So like so he can see that, okay, I can get folks out, I can get somebody out. That may work out for him. I'm not sure if Matt Williams has faith in him now though. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's about if Matt Williams has faith in him. So I can see him maybe playing a starter as a closer if that has to be.
Well. As we said earlier, you know, it looks like, you know, the demons of 2012 were still fresh on his mind. Maybe him getting this save in game three, he exercised those demons. Maybe. Let's hope that's the case.
Let's hope for it, because again, I would like to see a Beltway series, but I have it for some more sadistic purpose. We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
you mentioned game four, which is at 9:00. I mentioned. Obviously, do you trust Gio Gonzalez? But, you know, but do you really trust? Can you really, really? I mean, Gio Gonzalez, Storm. But can you really trust Gio? Do you trust Gio?
70-30. I think his last six starts shows us that he's starting to come back to form to where he used to be. But there's always that X factor with him, which is that emotion. Which is, if he starts to get roughed up a little bit, he really he doesn't take it that well. There aren't that many people who, you know, in the face of adversity, are able to stay calm and understand their objective and perform at a top level. Now, he's a professional, and I think he can do it, but it's still that X factor of his emotions. So that's what has me a little bit trepid about him. A little scared with him, but I think I know that he'll do it tonight.
All right, for me, I'm a believer. I believe in Gio Gonzalez. The most important thing for Gio Gonzalez though is that he has to have a solid first inning, and I mean 1-2-3. If he has a 1-2-3 inning, guarantee you that he's going to cruise. If he goes into the inning and he has to be like Houdini and get out of trouble from this, that, and he has to get out of trouble, then Matt Williams is going to have to be very careful about how he manages Gio Gonzalez. Maybe he's going to have to go with Roark to finish the rest of the game, maybe in the third inning or something. But Gio Gonzalez has to go, in my opinion, in the first inning, it has to be 1-2-3.
I don't think it has to be 1-2-3. That's my opinion. I think he has to get out of the inning unscratched, meaning he doesn't give up a run. I mean, I think it will boost his confidence if he gets into a tight situation and he pitches his way out. But, you know, then again, that emotion, he'll be overly happy emotion.
I don't trust his psyche. I just don't trust his psyche. He gets too wound up. So if he gets in trouble, if he gets, say he walks the first batter, that's a bad sign, period. All right. Because he has this, he just has it in his mind where it's like, okay, I gotta overthrow. Now he's losing movement in his fastball, which causes him to throw a ball. So for me, he needs to be, if he goes 1-2-3, and I mean 1-2-3 to a point where he's just throwing strikes. All right, hitters can get hits, but if he's throwing strikes, I feel that Gio Gonzalez will have a solid game. Period. If he walks the first batter, and let me backtrack. I mean, me saying 1-2-3. I mean 1-2. Me saying 1-2-3 is 1-2-3. It's smooth. It's like he's throwing strikes. Everything's easy. Not a 1-2-3 down the order, boom, straight. I'm talking about he's throwing strikes and he's just hitting the spots, period. He's going to be fine. If he is walking people, though, it's going to be an issue, period. And then Matt Williams is going to have to find a way to corral that, or say Roark coming to game.
I agree. I was going to say something.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say about hitting the spot, but I'll just leave that one alone.
Oh, my God. There you go. Oh, it's always one every show. I swear, it's always one every show. Oh, that's the worst, Will. But anyway, let's go to Ryan Zimmerman. Probably, I'm guessing Ryan Zimmerman's not starting. I've been like an advocate for him to start, but do you feel that he should start tonight at third?
It's a great question. I think he's shown you that he's the one guy that can be a consistent bat in your order, in your lineup. But also if you start him at third, there's those defensive, he's a defensive liability.
An important game.
But I think, you do what you're most comfortable with. You don't put him in the lineup to start out. You know, for strategic purposes, you maybe make a substitution that gets him in the lineup later on in the game. Maybe putting him at left field to bring that in. Left field to get you some insurance, to get you some hits if you get up.
That's Bryce Harper's spot.
Yeah, well.
You don't want to take out Bryce. He's too hot.
He's too hot. Maybe you shift Bryce. Maybe you shift Bryce to center field and
take out
Denard Span. All
right. So this is the thing.
I mean, you can't be conventional here. You gotta think like, what would Buck show? You got
WWB.
Yeah. What would Buck do?
WWBD.
What would Buck do? That's what Matt Williams should be thinking. This whole, what would Buck do?
I don't know, man. I really don't know what Buck would do in that situation. I'm just gonna go with what would Wally do? You know what I mean? Triple W with that D. That don't sound right, though.
Hey,
that don't sound right at all. Anyway, but no, I would start Ryan Zimmerman the third. I mean, this team needs offense. You're going against a team that has to me, in the Giants, that doesn't score a lot of runs. The Nationals have potential to score a lot of runs. So I would play Zimmerman at third. I know people would say, oh, well, he's a too much of a defensive liability. If he messes up, that could screw the Nationals' chance of, you know, winning the series. I mean, I'm all about risk. I think Ryan Zimmerman, the reward is higher than the risk, in my opinion. So I would definitely play him at third base. Have Rick Doan at second, Desmond at shortstop, first base, LaRoche. And I mean, you still have Ramos, Span, Worth, Harper. The lineup is stacked. That's an American League lineup. So if you can have a way to keep Zimmerman, and knowing that the pitcher, Vogelsong has to pitch around, all these individuals, that makes him tensed up. That makes him say, okay, I gotta be precise with my pitches. When pitchers try to be precise, that's when they get hit. All right. So that's the thing. I would love to see Zimmer in the lineup because I feel like he'd be potent, and it'd make the Giants pitchers wary, and truth be told, maybe start walking individuals. And when you walk people, they can come in on a 3-run homer or RBI single. So I'm all for it. On our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page, I posed the question, should Zimmerman play third base tonight? My man Chris is not a fan of it. He says, nope. He is a defensive liability. A liability everywhere he plays, and his bat isn't good enough to risk a major defensive lapse.
Okay.
That's my man. That's Chris and the Commish.
Okay.
That's my dude.
What's up?
Orioles fans, baby. Number one. We owe Chris the Orioles fan.
Okay.
We everywhere. My man Keith Stover. You know Keith?
Yeah.
Keith said Cabrera is too good to sit. If anything, he said Ian Desmond. That's if you're going to send someone on the infield. Besides, he's too much of a free swinger, which Will was talking about sometimes, and they need quality at bats. My man George said, isn't he still hurt? They didn't even leave him to run when he reached the base the other night. So he's hurt, but he can still play. I mean, he's not 110%, but he can run the bases. I mean, he did in the regular season, he ran the bases. So I'm for it. I'm for Zimmerman playing third. Are you for it or not? Not really.
Nah.
See with everybody else. With the consensus.
I'm for now. No. Now game five, when it comes back to DC, got to go all out. Got to empty the clip.
Yeah. Oh wow. Okay. Empty the clip. Anyway, real quick, the Dodgers are losing to the. Oh man, the Dodgers are losing to the St. Louis Cardinals 3-2 in the ninth. Two outs. Man on first. And who's at the? And Dodgers up 2-0 too. They were up 2-0.
Mm.
That's a shame. I'm rooting for the Dodgers. This actually may be like, this is crazy. This may be the Nats' time. This is the best chance for the Nats. They can play the Cardinals like you wanted them to.
Yep.
Will it happen?
Get rid of the Giants, then get rid of the Cardinals.
Oh, I'm sorry. Runner first and second. Excuse me. All right, the game's still going on. Runner first and second for the Dodgers with two outs. Can the Dodgers get an RBI single or a 3-run homer to take the lead? RBI single to tie and a 3-run homer to take the lead, or even a double to take the lead? We don't know. It may not happen. Anyway, it's about time for a commercial break.
All right. Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Doses.
I'm Peyton Manning. On the football field, I always have to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
This one's for you and me, living out our dreams. We're all right where we should be. With my arms out wide, I open my eyes, and now all I wanna see is a sky full of lighters. A sky.
Time you hear this, I will have already spiraled up. I would never do nothing to let you cowards f*** my world up. If I was you, I would duck or get struck like lightning fighters. Keep fighting, put your lighters up, point them skyward. Had a dream, I was king. I woke up.
Still king. I was about to give it to him, but not tonight. All right, welcome back from commercial break. We got a few reads before we get into Washington football. You can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website at www.walio.podbean.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, or Facebook. Just search Urban Sports Scene. If you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. You can also listen to us on the Sports Grid podcast show on Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit excuse me, www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Steeler Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Steeler Fan. Also, just to give you all a heads up that are listening, we're clearing the phone lines down and we're opening them up. You can give us a call at 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904 as we start our discussion on Washington's football team.
Let me get my outline back to Washington football team. Washington football team. It's insulting.
It's not insulting.
It's the Redskins. Actually, they can change it to Washington Skins. I wouldn't have a problem with that.
I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, the Washington Skins. Yeah. People call them the Skins anywhere.
Pretty much.
You just call them the Skins and call it.
I mean,
the
it's
day.
A happy medium for everyone.
Exactly. You know, it's not. But I will say this though: if I hear another individual say it's comparable to using the N-word, I'm gonna Kirk out.
Nah, not by far.
that's my only issue with the whole name thing. But that's a whole different topic.
Anyway. Okay, let's talk about the game.
Game thoughts, man. I'll let you go first.
Well, I'll get my thoughts.
I'm a little angry. So.
Well, I did some tailgating with some people.
Oh, did you really?
Yesterday. Okay. Yeah. So, to me, the only analogy, and I think I came up with the perfect analogy for this game.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, to me, this game, the fans' reaction was kind of, remember when you were younger and you did something wrong?
All right.
And your mom.
I did that a lot.
Yeah, or one of your parents said, wait till your parents get home.
Wait till the other parent gets home.
Yeah,
that's my mom. That's my dad.
Yeah, because you knew he was gonna get. Yeah. And this is how it felt to me. The fans, they were like, they knew this was coming.
It wasn't an ass whooping though.
No, but that's the thing. Sometimes you don't know if the ass whooping is gonna be that bad. What you depending on how your father felt. If he had a bad day, maybe the ass whooping was bad.
It's real. It was real.
If he was happy, he was like, I'm gonna let him off light this time. Just give him a couple love taps. Just let him know who the boss is. And I think that's what happened Monday night. Seattle just gave Washington a couple of love taps just to say, hey, we still the big dogs. We the boss. You know, we kept it close. It was a national game. We didn't really want to go too hard on you guys. But we just had to establish and let you guys know we're the boss and we run this.
But really, though?
Pretty much, yeah. I'm pretty... If you took a poll, just talking to most people in the parking lot while I was tailgating, a lot of people knew the ass whooping was coming. It just, was it going to be a aggressive ass whooping or was it just going to be love taps? And you got love taps. That's all.
I
that's all it is. What?
Oh, man.
What's so funny?
Man, it was. I thought we were going that game and like shock the world.
You're delusional.
I'm very delusional. I know who I am. I thought we were going to shock the world. We had a good opportunity. We had an opportunity to shock the world. But for some strange reason, Hazard wasn't prepared for this game. We're looking at, to me, this is a wide receiving core that is not good, to be honest with you, other than Percy Harvin. Russell Wilson made plays, but I look at it as bad tackling. Anytime you have anybody wrapped up, you bring them down, period.
I don't think it's just bad tackling. I think They put Arakpo in a position where
Arakpo, it was all of them.
It was all of
all them. The edges. It was
all
it was,
that.
It,
but they found a vulnerability in your defense, which is the edge rushers.
Yeah, they did.
And
they sure
you
did.
Would think that having Robert Griffin III as your quarterback and having to practice against this
exactly
for the past 2 years. Well, he hasn't played 2 years completely. He hasn't been healthy enough. But
you know, but yeah, exactly, you know what you're saying.
Yeah, you would think that they would be like, we got this. But that wasn't the case come Monday night.
It's not even just obviously having RG3. You would be think like, yeah, we should be prepared for something like this. But it's the trend of the NFL. It's not new. You act like this happened like 2 years ago. 2 years ago was new. This isn't new. And then when they kept doing it, you couldn't adjust. Like you couldn't say, okay, you know what? We're getting gashed for big runs. Let's just keep that. Just have play containment. Let's just keep the edge. Let's just set the edge, and that's it.
It's not even about containment. I think if you remember when Cincinnati Bengals played you all during Robert Griffin's first year.
Yeah, exactly.
What did the ends do? Even if he faked it.
They still went after him.
Just
go after him.
At a certain point, you got to be like, all right, this isn't working what we're doing.
Just hit the quarterback.
That's
what the Ravens did, the Bengals did, That's how
that's what teams do. That's what the great defensive teams do. They say, hey, the NFL has rules. Even if you carry out a fake, you're still in the field to play. Yeah. You could be hit.
You could be hit.
All you had to do was lay two or three good hits on Russell Wilson.
Then he would stop doing it. That's what made it. Didn't make any sense. It was dumb. It was just stupid coaching. It was the dumbest coaching in the world. I'm having a moment. Calm down.
After 5 weeks, I know when we came during the preseason, we both stated that we thought the defense would be a strength for this team.
Yeah, now it's
I don't think that anymore.
Now
it's a liability.
Now it's a liability.
It's definitely a liability. Whether it's because there's no D'Angelo Hall to be like that leader on the field for these guys, whether it's Haslett, his scheme, why he's unshackled, not working, or maybe it's, you know, Arakpo's happy because he got $11 million.
Yeah, it's just a lot. It's a lot going on.
It's a lot of things going on.
I mean, you got Brandon Merriweather who can't cover. Rambo looks better than him. Perry Riley, who we will be talking about very soon, because I'm on a petition and making sure that Perry Riley gets benched, because that man lost his edge. He lost his confidence. He lost his edge. He can't check nobody. His tackling is kind of it suffered. It's just a lot going on defensively. Special teams is a joke. Other than the punter, it's a joke. Seriously, this team.
But DeSean Jackson got the dance in the end zone.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Oh, you cool with that?
I'm cool with Deshaun Jackson. He don't bother me.
Even though you're losing?
Dancing? He balled. You could dance. That was an important touchdown. He scored an important touchdown. Okay. It was a BS touchdown. It was an important touchdown. Hey, if you celebrate.
17-7. It puts you within 10 points.
Yeah, okay. 10 points. Now if you're 17-7, it was like with 2 minutes left in the game and you're celebrating it. That's stupid. This game's still there.
You know, one thing I did notice, even though, because I didn't stay in the parking lot and watch the game. I came back home and watched the game. One thing I did notice because Robert Griffin III, when he was on the bench, he was taking notes of Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
And I think that's key to me. That shows a level of humility to me. That shows me a level, something that he wants to improve. He knows his deficiencies. He sees a guy who's doing it at a higher level than he is. And he's taking notes and he's saying, okay, what is this guy doing that I can incorporate in my game to make me better, to help me it to the level of being a Super Bowl winning champion?
Do you know what Russell Wilson's doing differently than RG3? It's not passing. It's not even a passing thing.
What is it?
It's just the willingness to really run. It's the willingness to really run and run straight ahead, not play sideline running. Like, I'm going to get the hole, hit. I'm going to get it. I'm not going to hesitate. I'm going to run. If RG3 would just stop hesitating, he would be fine. It's not the read and react, because truth be told, Russell Wilson isn't reading anything. He's playing. He's doing the ball faking skills and ran. Passing wise, he had two big throws. He had a bunch of dump offs in terms of scrabbling, dumping it off to Marshawn Lynch, and that was about it. Russell Wilson, his willingness to run and protect himself is something RG3 has to learn from. I'm showing RG3 that I run read option, and I'm cool with running pistol read option.
And I think on top of that, not only when Russell Wilson runs, he keeps his head up and looks to pass first. In most instances, Russell Wilson keeps his head and eyes up and looks to pass first, but knows that running is a viable option.
RG3 passes first. That's his problem. Yeah, he does. If you look, that's why he gets sacked. The difference between Russell Wilson,
this is what I'm saying. When he escapes the pocket or when he climbs up in the pocket, his head and eyes are up. It's not, okay, Robert Griffin, once he breaks containment, gets outside of the pocket, he's like, okay, I'm sprinting. I'm going. Russell Wilson is, keep my head up. I don't agree with that. Well, I mean, you can look at the film.
Yeah, no, the film don't lie. I'm right. RG3's head is always up. The problem with RG3, that don't even sound right either. All right, the problem with RG3 is that he doesn't just take off. Like, Russell Wilson's not scared to take off. And RG3's trying to show folks that he's a pop. It's like RG3 is trying to prove something, while Russell Wilson is just like, I'm just playing football. RG3's like, you know what? I have this lane here. I run 4-3, but I want to show that I can, you know, I can be a Peyton Manning. I could be a Tom Brady. Russell Wilson's like, I ain't worried about Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. I'm Russell Wilson. You know what I mean? I'm going to elude pressure. I'm gonna take what the defense gives me, and if you dare play me like with no spy, I'm gonna take off. Those long runs that Russell Wilson had, let that be RG3. I bet you still in the pocket.
Okay. Well,
bet you still in the pocket chilling.
I mean, that's something we could debate. I want to move to Richard Sherman, Pierre Garçon, but before that, I got to ask you one question.
Yeah.
We both saw RG3 or Robert Griffin III taking notes. Mm-hmm. Do you think he went up to Russell Wilson afterwards and said, "Can you autograph my notes?" Do you think he got him to look over? Do you think he got him to look over and be like, "Look, I took notes of what you did. What do you agree? Do you think this is right?"
I'm gonna read off some
You didn't answer the question.
I'm gonna read off some Facebook stuff.
Why you didn't ask the question?
Because it's disrespectful.
It's not a disrespectful.
That's disrespectful stuff. I'm not gonna ask you. I'm not gonna dignify that with an answer.
Okay.
I'm not gonna dignify that with an answer. That's a disrespectful.
It's not a disrespect. He'd be like, "Look, can you review my notes?"
He talked to Russell Wilson. You saw him.
He was like, "Look, I got these notes. I want you to review them for me."
Hey, did you hear? Real quick.
Okay.
Did you hear? Did Russell Wilson say? Did you read the article about Russell Wilson said he was a bully?
Yeah, yeah, I laughed at it.
Though pretty
well. No, he lives in Richmond. He's from Glen Allen,
yeah,
Virginia. Yeah, right outside of Richmond. So that it could be possible.
Why could it be possible?
I just say it's definitely possible. In that area, is definitely possible.
Okay, because I was like, oh, little pretty boy. It's pretty haired ninja.
If you ever been, I go down there. I frequent that area a lot, so it's definitely possible.
All right, let me read off. I'll read off some Facebook comments on our Urban Sports Scene page. Not actually our diehard Redskin fan page on Facebook. It's about Perry Riley. I told y'all before, I want Perry Riley benched. So I posed the question: should Perry Riley be benched? Sada said, "Who? I'm sorry, haven't heard that name in a while."
You heard that name last Thursday night, like those two or three touchdowns.
He ain't make plays, son.
Hey, I heard it when I was watching the broadcast, and he was getting touchdowns caught on like two or three times. So I'm familiar with the name.
My man Learn High said, "In favor of who?"
That's a great question.
I said Keem Jordan. I do a Keem Jordan or Compton, either or.
That's a great question, because everyone always says get rid of this guy, get rid of that guy. But what's the answer? Do you think Akeem Jordan is a definite upgrade over him in the run and in the pass? I know definitely in the pass he is, but do you think against the run he's a upgrade over Perry Riley?
In the run, I don't. I would say in the run, maybe not. Well, I don't know. He may be in the run because I think Perry Riley's struggling all the way around the board. I think his confidence to me is all. It's all about. I mean, anything you play in sport, any sports you play is about confidence. If you don't have it, you know.
You got one more, or
I got a couple more. Let me just read one more. My man Jay Lee said, "For who benching someone for another player that couldn't beat him out is pointless."
I mean, everyone has a point. You know, you think about it. You know, you went through training camps, you go through practices, so the coaches have the film, and they know if there's a guy in that locker room who they think could be an upgrade over Perry Riley Jr. Evidently, you know, maybe Allen and Gruden don't think, and also the linebacker coach and Haslam don't think there's a guy on that roster who's an upgrade over Perry Riley Jr.
Hey, let me read one more real quick. Okay. Robert said, "I'd say yes, but the guy behind him is probably worse." So everybody, yeah. So people are like,
I mean, people
different.
They're indifferent. Everyone has a mixed reaction, but I like the one. Guy said, who you go to?
Yeah, that's true. Who would you really go to?
All right, now let's get to something interesting. We had Richard Sherman, the modern day Muhammad Ali.
That's disrespectful to Muhammad Ali. That's disrespectful to Muhammad Ali. That Muhammad Ali had substance. Go ahead, I'm sorry, continue.
Well, we'll say the guy who's become the mouth of the NFL and definitely the mouth of the LOB, the Legion of Doom. He said that Pierre Garçon pulled his dreads on two occasions, and he also said that Pierre Garçon is not relevant and doesn't matter in the NFL.
He always talks when he only talks when he wins. He's that type of dude. He's the worst type. Let me tell you something about Richard Sherman, because you know I grew up with people like Richard Sherman. All right, I did. I grew up with people like Richard Sherman.
Okay. I'm gonna give you the floor.
Thank you. Like people,
I can see the intensity.
Yeah, people like Richard Sherman. They're like the most annoying people in the world because they're the type of person that when they're on top, they're doing their thing, or they're, you know, they're higher, they're performing at a good level. They're the first person that look at me. You can't do this. You some crap. Blah blah blah, trash talking. But as soon as they get their ass bust, they're on the negative side of something. It's all that yelling, all that high talking, like Michael Crabtree. When he did Michael Crabtree at the end of the game, you sorry, blah blah at the end. All that in, but when he got his ass bust by what happened by San Diego, it was quiet. Nope, I don't want to talk to no media. He didn't talk to the media. What did he do after that? He sat down his computer, was on Twitter, and it said like, and then put up stats about what happened in the game. But when it was time to talk,
well, I'll say this: in his defense, yeah, he did say he stuck around for 60 minutes after he showered in his locker.
So, but he didn't find anybody though.
Well, he's not around. That he has to find anyone. But they have to find him.
So it's convenient. He's stuck. So he's stuck around, but no one can find him. Who's a loud talking piece? But when he wins, he's easy to find. I just want to know. To me, it sounds like a person. Again, when you win, you're talking. When you lose,
that's most people.
Though. Exactly. But if you're gonna be that person, this is my thing. If you're gonna be that person, then be that person. Like, don't do it. Don't use social media when you get your ass bust by, was Matthews? No, not Matthews. I'm sorry. Allen. Allen. Get your ass bust by Allen from San Diego. And it was like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to say anything. And the truth be told, D-Jack's putting work on your ass. I'm being real. D-Jack's put work on your ass.
When?
No, he did. He called D-Jack's put work on.
You're talking about that touchdown?
No. He flipped him twice. Look at the tape. He flipped him twice. I'm just saying, D-Jack bust that ass. He did. He bust that ass. Like your neighborhood homie bust your ass. But you talking about Pierre Garçon? I did because he pulled your dreads out and you want to call him out. It's all good. It's all good. The ninja who bust your ass, you ain't say nothing because that's how you roll. But a dude that obviously we weren't trying to target like that, you know, because quote unquote, you know, we were getting away with holding because when you hold bigger people, they don't call it. But you hold like somebody like DeSean Jackson because you can't, because he's easy to see, because he's a quick little dude. The resume shows that you can't check little short dudes who are quick in the slot, you get your ass whipped. So that's what it is. I'm not mad. I'm just keeping it out there. I'm a little mad.
Be honest with your emotions.
I'm mad because I hate people like him. Because people like him are like the worst people. Like, I grew up trash talking. And if somebody, I'm not going to be quiet after the fact. Truth be told, if I lose and somebody talking trash to me, I get even more enraged. So I may even want to fight after that. But I'm still talking. But if I'm winning, I'm going to talk trash. If I'm losing, I'm going to talk trash. I'm going to talk trash probably even more when I'm losing. I don't want to hear Richard Sherman. I don't want to hear about this. This dude is too much for me. He extra. You know what extra means? You over-talk. You go above your means. You're not even like Deion and Daryl Green and Champ Bailey and them. You play on one side, and they play zone most of the time with you. You got Earl Thomas over top. You ain't even a lockdown corner. Shut up.
How do you really feel about him? But no, I think, you know, to say a man isn't relevant in the NFL when just last season he caught 106 passes, I think is going a little bit overboard. I understand his frustration. You know, if I had dreads, you've had dreads before.
I had dreads. Nobody pulled my dreads out.
Yeah, so, you know, that led to it. And then also probably some of the jawing during the game. So, you know, that probably led up to those thoughts. I'm pretty sure in a mild-mannered, more subdued Richard Sherman probably wouldn't be that harsh with his statement about him, or maybe he would. We don't know, but Richard, there's no denying he's one of the top corners in the NFL.
Yeah, play some man, real man.
Well, he does. I mean, but this is the thing, though.
Or three deep zone.
See, this is the thing. The argument with people. You can't be dominant at something that they don't ask you to do. All you can ever do is when your employer asks you to do something and you're the best at that, and you do that the best of your ability, that's all they can judge you on.
I know.
If Pete Carroll told him to switch sides of the field or play man the whole time, then you could judge him on that. But what he does, he's the best at it. Hands down, point blank,
period. Yeah, he's the best at playing in 3D, three deep coverage. He's the best at it.
I mean,
he's the best at playing three deep coverage with a safety over top. The best at it.
Well, I mean,
when his safeties are Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor, the best. He's the best cornerback at it. I know the cornerbacks I saw growing up. Even now, and I'm not even going to talk about this, you know, when we were stupid young, but like Champ Bailey, Charles Woodson, I know Darrell Revis, them dudes took their man one up, no safety help over top. I rarely see them with like safety help over top. And, I mean, I'm sure it happens, but it was rare. I know that much. It was rare. It was true man to man coverage.
Well, some could make the case that with Brandon Browner gone, Earl Thomas has to play, slide a little bit over to the left and play a little bit higher over top of Maxwell.
Yeah, he plays over top of Maxwell. He does the ball. He plays center field, straight out center field. He chooses which side he goes on. He shades whoever he has to shade. He shaded on the other side.
All I'm going to say is this. I'm not going to discredit. You know, I do think his comments were a little bit overboard by saying he isn't relevant in the NFL because the guy just caught 106 passes last year, exactly. Which lets you know that he may not have the highest level of receiving ability in the NFL, but he's definitely up there and has, yeah, you know, one of the top quarter of NFL wide receivers. So I think it was a bit overboard. But I'm also not going to sit up here and discredit what Richard Sherman does because me personally, I think he's the best cover corner in the NFL.
I disagree. But I just feel like in that game, like my man Pierre Garçon should have had more opportunity. I would have targeted him on Sherman. I would have. I have faith in Pierre Garçon's that sounds bad too. Yeah. I'm not going to stop that. Football skills in terms of how to catch the
football. Receiving ability?
Yeah, there you go. Receiving ability. You know, when the ball is in the air, he has good, you know, football
ball
skills.
Ball skills?
Yeah, good. I ain't want to say. That's what I want to say.
I knew you didn't want to say it.
Yeah, ball skills. You know what I mean? So I have faith in him because, you know, he's a guy who makes the miraculous catch.
He's a good
catch.
Ball snatcher in midair.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It's like, nah.
He's a good ball snatcher.
Let's move on, though.
You're right, unfortunately.
What could Washington have done to have gotten him more involved?
Well, I just think again, I would do maybe a wide receiver screen. Some
by
more
him, screen. I mean Pierre Garçon.
I know some wide receiver screens so he can be more physical. I think they looked at the blueprint of how to attack Richard Sherman with DeSean Jackson because you know like you saw the rumors like when they were saying that okay this is the blueprint to go against Richard Sherman. You have a small guy, shifty guy, quick guy in a slot, or you know, and you know, shake him with space, and then you can get the long explosive plays. But I think for Pierre Garçon, I think they should have just went at him. He's a guy who, I mean, Richard Sherman doesn't tower over him. Pierre Garçon's a physical. He's a physical wide receiver. Let him use that as an advantage. He's not a finesse guy. Use that as an advantage. So when the ball's in the air, he can you know do his thing. I mean, we saw Pierre Garçon catch one handed catches. You know, you saw the Eagles game when he was making all these kind of grabs where it was like, dang, dude. Like,
yeah.
You know, your hands, you got to stick them in your hands. So let him make a play. You know, you're letting DeSean Jackson make plays. Let Pierre Garçon make plays.
All right, let's stick on the offensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
As we all know, Alfred Morris could be, he's shown in the past, specifically during his rookie season, that he could be a bell cow for this team. He's shown that during the second year. I read a stat somewhere that, in his past 16 games, Alfred Morris has only run for 100 yards four times. So do you think Washington should have focused on the run a little bit more yesterday?
Definitely should have focused on it. I know this is the enemy, but you look at the Dallas Cowboys, how committed they are to the running game. Even though it may not be working against the Seattle team, keep doing it.
Well, I'll point to this. Arizona, San Fran, San Diego. I say those three teams specifically because those are the teams that when they've had success against Seattle, they did it one way, which was running between the tackles. Washington gave up on that. even though Washington runs a zone run scheme,
yeah.
you still should have been far more physical coming off the ball and been able to get those D tackles tired. Because if you think about it, that's specifically what San Diego did to beat Seattle. They ran the ball right in between the tackles and got those D tackles tired, and in turn that made those D tackles not able to push the pocket against Phillip Rivers and left a pocket for Phillip Rivers to step up and make plays, including those three touchdowns to Antonio Gates. You didn't see that last night. You see a team that even going back to his Cincinnati days, Jay Gruden has shown that he doesn't have a lot of patience for running the ball if the run game isn't working. To me, I'm not going to say he fully abandoned it, but you got to stay consistent, this is our mentality, we're going to run the ball on you. If you stop it, we're still going to run the ball on you some more. Teams like San Francisco, San Diego, Baltimore, and even the Texans, they have a mentality. And even, you know, a lot of Washington fans aren't going to want to hear this, but even in Cleveland now with Kyle Shanahan, yeah, they have the mentality of, we're going to run the ball at you. You're going to have to stop us. You're going to have to kill us for us to not to run the ball at you. And I just don't see that with this Jay Gruden team.
I mean, look at it with, again, I'm going to use the enemy, the Dallas Cowboys. They run the ball. It used to be, okay, we'll let Tony Romo make plays. No, DeMarco Murray is your team now.
Yep.
It should be that way with Alfred Morris. It should be this way. It should be that way with Alfred. It should be that way with Alfred Morris with RG3 health 100%. Like, use Alfred Morris and then play off that.
We'll get into it in the next NFL segment, but that boy DeMarco Murray is on fire.
Yeah, beast.
I don't think it's sustainable though.
No, I don't think so. I think he'll be hurt eventually.
Yeah,
not to be, but that's his track record.
He hasn't shown he can do it for 16 games.
He fumbles every game though.
Yeah, with 30 carries.
Yeah,
that's not sustainable.
Yeah, he fumbles every game. But let's go into Redskins Arizona, that game, which will be coming up next week, Sunday. Is there hope for
finally a Sunday game where you belong?
Not on prime time. I agree with you.
There's hope. We'll
be back on primetime, too, again. Oh, yeah. We'll be on primetime.
Yeah, against Dallas.
And RG3's target date.
Yes, October 27th.
Please come back.
I actually do think you have a chance to win this because they lost their two best defensive linemen, Darnell Dockett, who's out for the—don't want to say his name wrong. He might come see about it. who's out for the season. Then also, on Sunday, you lost Calais Campbell. With Bruce Arians will say the dirtiest play that he's seen in the last 35 years.
Clip, right?
Huh?
The clip?
The chop block. He doesn't remember a player that he used to coach, Hines Ward, with those hellacious pillback blocks.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And broke people's jaw. It's funny how people lose perspective and insight on things. But I actually think Washington has an extremely good chance to win this game for two reasons. As I just stated, you know, the missing pieces on their D-line and also the quarterback play. We don't know if Stanton's going to be back, and they might have to go with Logan Thomas. And this could be the opportunity for them to get a W, because if Washington doesn't win this game, your season's over.
Yeah,
you'll be 1-5.
I've done the math.
Yeah, you'll be 1-5, 2 losses in the NFC East, and 3 losses in NFC. So for a total of 5 losses and the NFC altogether.
For tiebreaker purposes.
Yeah, so for tiebreaker purposes, your playoff chances are pretty much out the door with this one if you don't get this win.
So, this game is, you know, I think Carson Palmer may come back with this game, though. That's what I'm thinking.
Who the hell is Carson Palmer?
Carson Palmer was having an excellent season before this the injury.
Once again, who the hell is Carson Palmer?
Why are we disrespecting Carson Palmer?
I'm not disrespecting him. I'm just saying.
Carson Palmer is one of the best USC quarterbacks to ever play in a game. I don't really care.
That's not saying a lot.
I know, right? I'm not saying anything about Carson. I don't care for Carson Palmer. But, yeah, there is hope, because, to me, if you have, if it's Carson Palmer, then you know you're not going to have a mobile quarterback. So there's an opportunity to get some sacks without
Arakpo. Can add to his half of sack total.
Yeah, exactly. Arakpo, Kerrigan. Kerrigan can now add on to his sack total, maybe, so he can lead the league in sacks. So there's an opportunity. There is an opportunity, you know. And if it's Logan Paul, said Logan Paulson. I hate that tight end for the Washington Redskins. Logan. No. For the Cardinals, the quarterback.
Logan Thomas.
Logan Thomas. If it's Logan Thomas, then it's a rookie. All right. And we saw in VTech, he's still very raw. Very raw. So
like sushi raw.
Yeah, sushi raw. You know, sushi nowadays is cooked, but yeah. Extremely
tashimi.
There you go. Raw. Yeah, exactly. So that's a whole different situation. So that puts the Redskins in a different way. It puts the Redskins in a positive way of, you know, looking at things and saying, okay, we can get a W here. Obviously, there are elements that do scare me. Michael Floyd, Larry Fitzgerald. It's a problem. You do need a quarterback giving the ball, but it's a problem, though. It is a problem.
And then, you know, you also on the defensive side, you have the guy who you think is the best cover corner, Patrick Peterson.
Oh yeah, I think Patrick Peterson is the best cover corner.
That's why. I really do. Who's the best Patrick?
I think he's the best cover corner.
Then you have Antonio. Cromartie.
Antonio Cromartie's on the other side.
I'm not saying he's a lockdown corner, but he's definitely
a playmaker. Anytime a guy who like Kirk Cousins who likes to throw the ball around, it's there. There's picks to be made.
To me, the key to this game is throwing the ball inside the numbers. If you're Kirk Cousins, don't go away from what's been a strength to you this far, which is trying to make those deep out throws. Yeah. You can make the deep throws, but don't those deep comeback throws and things like that. Because as you saw during the Giants game, people know that you stare at that and they lock on that and then they sit on those routes.
But he did fix it, though. When that play to DeSean Jackson, the reason why Richard Sherman bit was Richard Sherman, he took a risk. He thought it was going to Paul. Now it's Paul.
Well,
he changed his eye vision.
Well, now you're talking about DeSean Jackson, that touchdown.
Yeah.
No, if you look at it, it was actually Cam Chancellor. They switched at the snap. So Richard Sherman went inside and Cam Chancellor took DeSean Jackson. So when people say that Richard Sherman got beat on that play, he didn't get beat.
No. According to Chris Cooley, who did the tape. I want to listen to Chris Cooley because, you know, he's a Redskins fan.
I'm looking at the tape, what I see on TV.
I saw that on TV, too. I saw the same thing Chris Cooley saw. So we agree to disagree. I didn't say he got beat. I didn't say he got beat. I said he took a risk. There's a difference. He thought he jumped the route to the other, to that one you're referring to. He jumped the route, leaving, and DeSean Jackson, he played his route off and spanned it out a little bit more to go deep. So Richard Sherman thought, he said, okay, he saw Kirk Cousins going to make that pass there. And that's why he was open the sideline with the safety over top. Was kind of a little late, though.
Okay.
That's all. We can agree to disagree. It's okay. I'm not a Richard Sherman fan, so I'm going to be against
Richard
Sherman.
I know. You're very biased.
I'm very, very biased. I won't even lie about it. But what does the team need to do to fix whatever? Against the Cardinals? Whatever.
No Calais Campbell. You need 25 carries for Alfred Morris. Kirk Cousins, avoid from trying to throw those deep comeback routes against Patrick Peterson and Patrick Peterson and Cromartie. If Niles Paul or Jordan Reed are able to play, you need to use those guys. And you also need to run the ball away from Larry Foote. Larry Foote's been very good in the run game for stopping the run for the Cardinals.
Larry Foote?
Larry Foote. Have you seen him?
I haven't seen him lately. He's been
solid against the run. So you need to find a way to get him blocked with Lavelle and Lichtensteiger at that second level.
Lichtensteiger's good. Lavelle's some garbage. What this team needs to do is, one, Morgan Moses shouldn't see the field. I've been preaching for Morgan Moses, but with that one play, he let Averill go. Almost got my man killed. He almost got Captain Kirk killed. We were going to see McCoy. Mm. He was that bad. But all jokes aside, I need Jordan Reed to suit up. I think I'm pretty much done with Niles Paul. Can't block with him. Can't block.
Well, he's a guy that in the passing game is vital for you.
Well, I mean, the
because if you think, well, no, I want to cut you off quick.
No, I mean, if we get Jordan Reed back, I just feel like, one, we don't have to put that much pressure on Niles Paul to do anything. Two, we can have a two tight end set with him And now it's Paul and Jordan Reed. Obviously, I'm thinking of the Patriots. So we can utilize it in a way where we can, like, now use, have, you know, really go with some real mismatches. Because, like we mentioned, there's Pierre Garçon going against, probably going to be Cromartie and Patrick Peterson going against, you know, DeSean Jackson. We can definitely, can take advantage of the middle of the field with two tight ends. You know what I mean? So,
well, I was thinking, yeah, two tight ends, but.
Well, Andre Roberts is going to get it.
Andre Roberts in the slot.
But, going home, playing against the former team, so.
Who shouldn't be lost, who's actually having a pretty good season for Washington. But, no, I'm thinking if you have Jordan Reed and Niles Paul, those two guys would be matchup, would be a matchup advantage against the Cardinals linebackers.
Yeah, I totally agree, yeah.
So.
It's just, you just need Jordan Reed to be healthy and not waste any time. Stop being soft.
That guy's never healthy.
Yeah, I know. So, and also we have to improve, like, we have to improve the safety play. I'm talking about both Ryan Clark and and Merriweather. Obviously, I'm gonna keep saying it. Perry Riley, if you're gonna start, dude, ball out. Like, then just play 100 miles per hour. All this, no, don't hesitate. Play 100 miles per hour.
So you're saying just react.
Just react. Don't think so much. Just react. Because if you're going to play bad, you might as well play bad 100%. Don't play bad like this. Play bad 110%. Let it all go. Let it all fly, man.
Let it fly.
Let it fly. Let it loose. Let it hang low.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Let it hang
low.
You
said it.
You know what I'm saying?
All right. We're going to take this quick commercial break.
I ain't making no predictions. You can make a prediction. I ain't making a prediction.
Oh, no. I forgot.
No, I'm not doing a prediction.
You should.
No, I'm too pissed off.
Okay.
I'll let you do a prediction.
I actually think that Washington takes this game 21-17.
That's a good one. I'm being quiet. I'm annoyed. Papa John's, y'all can't do me any justice.
Okay.
Anyways, Urban Sports, we're about to go to commercial break. We're going to talk about week six. Is it week six or week five?
Week five.
Week five notables.
And also we'll make predictions for week six and we'll have our fantasy football picks.
All right. It's the Urban Sports sign.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
My life is full of statistics. Thing is, I could have dropped out of school and become one myself, but I didn't because I had people that believed in me. Here's another statistic. 7,000 students drop out every school day. That's one every 26 seconds. It's time that students know that we believe in them.
Inspire a student and share your message of support at boostup.org.
I love Juicy J, that's my man. Anyway, it's the Urban Sports team back from commercial break. And now we're going to discuss the Jets, Geno Smith, and the Chargers, Michael Vick. Jets got their ass whipped by the Chargers on Sunday. 31-0.
Unfortunately, the people in the DMV area, well, I know at least this where I live at, we were forced to watch that game. There wasn't any other 4 o'clock game on.
They flipped it. They flipped it, though, eventually.
Yeah, they did. They hit the mercy the mercy rule
the
like
TV
in Madden
rule.
Like in Madden when you up 21 back in the day it used to be when you played Madden when you up 21 points you gave the person the opportunity to just bow out gracefully
when you're playing somebody one on one
it was horrendous. Geno Smith, who may I mention, is a Wally guy. Wally fully
Wally.
Believes in
I still do. I think my point is validated.
No one's going to sit here and argue with you that he doesn't have any weapons. Eric Decker is clearly number two. He's nowhere near a high end two that could be a one. He's a number two. We all know that Peyton Manning, that offense helped inflate his numbers. And he got paid, as you should do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, ain't knocking that.
Nobody
nothing
wrong
that.
With that. Chris Ivory is. He's not a guy you could put the offense on his back and he's going to lead you. Chris Johnson just simply isn't what he used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Cumberland, the tight end, and I forgot the other rookie tight end. They aren't providing that got two guys that can dominate the middle of the field, which we all know for young quarterbacks is essential.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Curley, who's a guy who could be a pretty good slot receiver, but at this point isn't.
But he's your number one at the moment. That's the sad thing about it.
But, you know, on our offensive line, you have Nick Mango, who's probably the best center. And then you have Bergeshaw Ferguson, who's a former Pro Bowler. And you take all that into consideration. Geno Smith just doesn't have a lot going for him. And that showed against the team, the Chargers, who came out and said, we're pretty much going to put our foot on your throat.
We're going to take over.
Yeah. And to me, it looked as if the Jets just didn't have any fight in them after a certain point. They just didn't, you know. Usually you don't see one guy specifically running over the Jets like this. But Brendan Oliver, who's a guy who I will put in on a waiver on for fantasy football next week.
He got busy on him.
He had a 55-yard run. He was physical running in between the tackles. Showed good burst outside of the tackles.
Yeah, quick burst.
Yeah, that quick burst. I know about the quick burst. King of the burst.
Yeah, man, we'll see.
Geno didn't have a lot going for him. The Chargers look like they're one of those teams that are on a mission this year. You couple all of that, and it was a bad formula for Geno. Then they bring in Michael Vick, who wasn't much better. He was 9 for 20. Mike Vick looked like, damn, why the hell y'all put me in? I'm trying to just collect his check.
Get his check.
And he's like, look, I'm really hell bent on being a mentor.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not trying to play.
Yeah, he's real. He's real with his. Like, yeah. I ain't trying to play with his team. Y'all ain't giving no D-Jacks or no freaking Macklin.
Hey, Michael Vick looked like he wanted no parts of that game.
Yeah, but I thought it was kind of unfair to Michael Vick.
It was.
It really was. I posed the question, like, on our Urban Sports Team's Facebook page, I said, stop blaming Geno. The Jets gave him no weapons. Even my man Michael Vick can't save this offense. You know what I mean? I was like, and I had some comments from it. My man Troy Perry, who agreed with me, was like, at least Rex Ryan remains committed to Geno. He already stated that he's going to start Geno next week.
I think that's good. I think that Rex is committed to his guy, and if you have a guy, you stand behind him. I mean, hell, he stood behind Mark Sanchez. And I think Mark Sanchez, the same thing. You can't necessarily say he was a terrible quarterback because he never had any weapons around him.
I think they gave him Braylon Edwards,
Santonio Holmes, and you also had LaDainian Tomlinson, who was at the end of his career.
Yeah, but you gave him – he had something. You know what I mean? He had something to go off. He had guys who were number ones.
He had guys who were
number ones at a time.
He had guys who you could say – are professional wide receivers.
Yeah, exactly. That's the better. Okay.
Yeah.
Those are guys to me that, well, I'll say this. They were guys that were lesser quarterbacks. Like for Braylon, Braylon got like 1,300 yards with like Derek Anderson. All right. That's an accomplishment. All right. So those are guys, like you said, for me, were potentially number one wide receivers. But you just gave Geno Smith, you're a young quarterback, Decker as your number one. That's ridiculous. I even had a problem. That's ridiculous. You know what I mean? You have to at least give him two stud wide receivers. Well, not stud, but two good, really good wide receivers. So you can really assess him and say, okay, Geno, you're some garbage. Okay, Geno, you're good.
I think, just for fairness sake, if you had to gave him Eric Decker and Golden Tate,
that's something. Yeah,
that's something you can work with. You could better assess him if you give him Golden Tate, who was a free agent, and Eric Decker.
Totally,
you could have definitely been like, after the season, if you wanted to move on from him, you could have been like, okay, we gave him at least two starting quality wide receivers. We're not going to say we gave him a number one, but we gave him two starting quality wide receivers, and you can assess him and you can move on from there. But just in this situation, you can't really fully assess him, because he doesn't have any talent around him. You don't know if he's your guy or not. You're stuck with him for another year.
Exactly. Are we both in agreement that he should start next week, though?
Absolutely.
All right, we both agree that Geno should start next week. Anyway, let's go to the Chiefs-Niners battle. So Kaepernick wins the game. But coming from that game, do you have Kaepernick as the better quarterback between him and Alex Smith?
Well, I think you have to put some things into context. If you ask me, tomorrow, I have to pick between Alex Smith or Colin Kaepernick to win me a game tomorrow or today.
Yeah.
I'm going with Alex Smith.
Gotcha.
But if you ask me long term, I'm going with Colin Kaepernick because he has a higher upside.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Alex Smith because I think Alex Smith won't lose you a game. Colin Kaepernick at this point in time will lose you a game. Alex Smith, you can call him safe or managing, whatever. Alex Smith will not lose me a game.
But on the flip side, Colin Kaepernick can win you a game.
Yeah, I know.
Alex Smith isn't going to win you a game.
I agree. But
so it's a duality to it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just think that if I have a strong team like the Niners, like let's look at the Niners, the way this team is constructed and built for that team, I think that Alex Smith can win me a championship because they're strong enough without mistakes, as you saw in the Eagles game. They're strong enough to even overcome mistakes. Could you imagine if they didn't have a quarterback that turned the ball over, how potent that defense could be, even with the loss of Bowman?
Oh, I totally. I think, yeah, if you put that into context, if you say, okay, you don't have Alden Smith now, but you'll have him back later on this year. You'll have Navarro Bowman if you're able to make a playoff run. You have Alex Smith. While those two guys aren't there, then also take on top of that the subtractions they had in that defensive backfield. Alex Smith would have you on the course to 11-5 easily.
Yeah, I totally agree.
With Colin Kaepernick, a little bit of trepidation because you know he's going to, for the game, for the two or three games he'll win for you, he may cost you two or three games.
Yeah, and also, there's a coaching aspect to it too. The coaches trust Kaepernick to try to be explosive, to make the explosive plays. As in for Alex Smith, they're focused on the safe play, and they trust him to be safe. So, in a way, they're going to fall back on that running game, the Frank Gore style of game, which is conducive to which is winning football for the 49ers anyway.
Right.
So, in a way, even by having an Alex Smith on the San Francisco 49ers, it forces them to play winning football.
True.
You know what I mean? So, but again, it's not a knock on Kaepernick. I do agree, though, down in the long run, Kaepernick's the better quarterback. I totally agree with that. But anyway, let's go to the Bengals-Patriots. The Patriots gave the Bengals that vicious ale, that beatdown. Did the media fuel the Patriots' anger?
I don't think the media fueled it. I think, I think it's a combination of a couple things, three things. Bill Belichick being able to manipulate and motivate. A Monday night primetime game, which we all know the Bengals do not perform in well. And then also, number three, they did get tired of hearing the fans and the media acting as if the sky had fallen in Boston and everything was running amok. You granted, over the first four games, Tom Brady and that offense didn't perform up to a certain level you're accustomed to him performing at, but I just knew it wasn't going to take long for them to shake things up and fix it. And having the Bengals on a primetime game was the right medicine for them.
Yeah, surprised that they dominated the Bengals that way. I felt the Bengals were for real. I think we said last week. I said that I had the Bengals the best team through the quarter, the best
you,
team in football.
You had
no idea. I know I said I did.
Okay.
I didn't take that away from you though. I know I said it.
I'm just making sure. Remember.
I remember the time, son. What I said.
All right.
I said it.
Okay.
Yeah, but obviously my mind has changed because you don't get beat that bad and to be the best team. But the Patriots were they wanted it more. They wanted to prove to folks that they were the better. They weren't done, and they did it. And Bill Belichick wanted to send a message out to the NFL, and he did. He got an opportunity to do it on prime time, and he did it. So I'm just interested. Well, this division is easy for them, so they should win this division. But I want to see what they take it to in terms of being a championship contender.
No, because I think there are two teams in the AFC that are clearly better than them, and they both reside in the AFC West, in San Diego and the Denver Broncos.
The Chiefs may be better than them as well.
That's a possibility.
The Chiefs may be better. I mean, that AFC West is a beast. Top three teams.
Yeah, top three teams.
Are a beast. What does this law say about the Bengals then?
Shows that they aren't ready for prime time. It shows that Marvin Lewis doesn't get his guys ready for big games. As we've seen,
even though the Ravens in Baltimore, that wasn't a big game.
It wasn't a primetime game.
Got you. Okay.
When all of the lights are on the Bengals, we've seen that they don't show up. Mm. Last 3 years let us know first round of the playoffs. They've had pretty good teams that should have advanced out of that wild card spot. And they never advanced.
That's true. Let's get to the Cowboys, they're 4-1, just beat up on the Texans. Are the Cowboys the favorites to win the NFC East?
Hell no.
Is it still the Eagles?
Still the Eagles, for the simple fact that Cowboys haven't beaten anyone.
Preach! All right, Cowboy fans, hold on. I wanted to hear this. I wanted to say this myself, but Will beat me to it. Let's look at the teams you've beaten. Let's be real.
Yeah.
You beat the Titans.
You beat the Titans. You beat the Texans.
You beat the Saints.
You beat the Saints.
Saints on the road. Mm-hmm. The Browns beat. People beat the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
And then you beat the... Who else did you beat? Who else did they beat?
They're 4-1. Sure.
They beat somebody.
The
Rams. The comeback. Rams.
The Rams, yeah.
You haven't beaten anybody.
Go ahead. I'm not a believer. I'm starting to... If you ask me what is the percentage of my belief in the Cowboys, I would say at this point 65%.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to rear its head already. Jerry Jones stating that we need to take the ball out of DeMarco Murray's hands because there are concerns about him being injured. So that's letting me know right there that Jerry's already going to stick his head in.
Yeah.
And he wants a piece. He wants to stake his claim because right now he can't claim this 4-1. All he could do is say, well, I drafted Zach Martin, I drafted Tyron Smith, and I drafted the center.
He wanted Johnny football, man. He wanted Johnny football.
Yeah, but, you know, he can't stake claim to this as of yet. Him coming out and saying, well, we need to save DeMarco Murray a little bit. And if they go to putting the ball in Romo's hands, then he could stake his claim that he had some say in this team winning a championship. If I was Jerry, I would shut the hell up, sit back. You actually look like you have a team that's capable of getting to clinching, that's possibly can clinch the NFC East title and get you at least to the second weekend of the playoffs. So Jerry Jones, shut the hell up, sit back. Hopefully DeMarco Murray isn't injured, but even though I'm not a full believer in him because his track record has shown that he can't play 16 games and can't handle all these carries.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not believing DeMarco Murray. I believe he will get hurt. Not wishing injury on anybody, but just that. Look at the track record. Like Will said, this team hasn't played anybody yet. Next week, you come back to reality.
Yeah, you play Seattle.
In Seattle.
If he's able to get his 100 yards rushing in Seattle, I'll believe in what they're doing.
Exactly.
But until then, if you make this a close game,
I believe what you're doing.
I'll probably go 70-30.
Yeah.
But until then, but I really don't see that happen. I see them going to Seattle and getting the brakes beat off of them.
Me too.
But anything's possible in today's NFL because, you know, it changes week by week.
They got beat bad by the San Francisco Giants, and DeMarco Murray went off. They got blown out by the Niners.
Yeah.
The only loss they had, which is against a dominant team. And they got beat bad. So they're going against Seattle, another dominant team, and we'll see how they play. We can't compare the Saints. Come on, now we've seen the Saints.
Saints are terrible.
They almost lost to Tampa.
Yep, they lost to, even though the Browns are nothing to sneeze at this year.
They lost to the Browns.
They lost to
Atlanta.
Atlanta.
So I mean, this team is they're under 500. Am I correct?
Yeah.
So we're not talking about anything special with the Saints. So. And you beat the Titans, which whoop-de-doo. So this team isn't strong, and they haven't done anything. So I'm sick of you Cowboy fans coming to my Redskins. We suck, I know. But you all have played a nice schedule. I'm no granted now. You played the same team we played in the Texans, but you played the Texans. Well, actually, that was a home game, though.
Yeah. Well, and also you have to remember this isn't late November and December yet. That is famously
right.
When the Cowboys melt down.
Yes, that's right.
Holler at me at. Holler at me after Thanksgiving.
That's true.
Then I'll be able to make a proper assessment.
All right, well, let's go to our picks. Week 5 picks. Texans versus Cowboys. Will and I both picked the Cowboys. The Ravens, Colts. Will picked the Ravens. I picked the Colts, so I won there. Arizona versus the Broncos. We both picked the Broncos. We both won there. And Kansas City versus San Fran. Will picked the Chiefs, and I picked the Niners. So I went 3-1. Will went 1-3. Will's usually, you know, really good, but this week was a bad week for Will.
Yeah.
You on the edge, though, man. You were good, though. You was an edge rusher.
It wasn't my best of weeks.
It's okay, man. You know, I actually had a good week that week. I'm
well,
mad.
No, I went 2-2.
It was 2-2?
Yeah, I picked the Cowboys. Cowboys won.
No, we both picked the Texans. I'm sorry.
Oh, we both picked the Texans.
We're incorrect.
Okay. All right.
We both picked the Texans. Isn't that incorrect?
Okay.
It's both picked the Texans. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so,
mentally.
Well, 1-3.
Yeah. I would have been undefeated. I'm sorry. 1-3.
3-1.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Texans. I'm sorry, but
I'm still 9-8 for the season. So you're a little bit. You still have some money for Christmas.
Good.
If you're going with my bets, you still got a little bit of money for Christmas.
You believe over 500 is great, right?
Absolutely.
Exactly. So you know, me personally, I'm 12-9. It's a good record. I think I should be better than that. You know what I mean? Better than 12-9. Only three over. I want to be like 10 over. Like I want to be right every week. That's me. I want to be perfect in life. Let's go for week 6 picks. Colts versus Texans.
Going with the Texans.
I'm going with the Colts. I believe in Andrew Luck. Bears versus the Falcons. It's in Atlanta.
I really believe in the Bears. I think they were my team that could possibly make it to at least the NFC Championship game. I haven't jumped ship yet.
They lost to Carolina. What's great with
I'm still going with the Bears.
You want the Bears? I'm going to go with the Falcons. The Falcons are a better team at home than they are on the road. I believe you see Roddy White and Julio Jones do some damage. Cowboys versus the Seahawks. We already know this.
Seattle.
Giants versus the Eagles.
In Philadelphia, I'm going to go Eagles for the reason that they've been creating a lot of turnovers and getting in the end zone.
And special teams, too.
And special teams. And we all know that even though the offense have changed, they want to get out quickly with Eli. I think that Eli, he's captain of giving the ball up. So I'm going with Eagles.
I'm going to go with the Eagles because of the home game. Though the Giants have played great ball, they love Odell Beckham. I thought it was overhyping Odell Beckham like he was Randy Moss. But anyway, I'm gonna go with the Eagles. The Eagles will put pressure on Eli, and also if you paid attention, the Giants are now trying to run this more of a hurry up style. And the team that runs the hurry up style best is the Eagles. Anytime you try to play a style similar to what the Eagles are doing, Chip Kelly's offense, I think you're destined for failure.
Yep.
So, anyways, let's go over to fantasy football real quick. Last week, Will picked Trent Richardson to get
terrible out. Pick.
And I picked Sammy Watkins Jr. because of my man Kyle Orton. Sammy Watkins had like 85 yards. So, I'm good with that. That's 8 points.
Okay.
Not a touchdown. That's marginable. You ain't do bad by me. I'm on a hot streak. So, you ain't doing bad by me. You're doing good by me.
Let's switch it up this week.
Go ahead.
I think that we should pick. You have a fantasy team, right?
Yeah, I have a fantasy
team. And I have a fantasy team.
Yeah.
So I think we should both pick someone on our fantasy. Trent Richardson.
On our fantasy team?
Yeah, Trent Richardson was on my team. I've been picking guys on.
I got Sammy Watkins on my team. That's cool.
Okay,
we can do that.
All right, so go. Who you got?
On my team, let me check. On my team, I'm looking at my team right now. God bless iPhones, applications, and whatnot. So who's on my team right now? I'm trying to look at my roster. All right. I'm going to pick somebody who's like kind of, you know, not as.
Yeah, I'm not because I have Julio Jones and I have Peyton Manning on my team and Julius.
So would Larry Fitzgerald be like a
absolutely. Known? Look at his play so far this year.
He ain't looking that good, right?
No, not
so
at all.
So I'm going to put Larry Fitzgerald against my Washington Redskins.
And I am going to go with Brian Quick against the San Francisco 49ers.
Ooh, good one. That's a good one. All right, y'all. Well, anyway, it's about time for a commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking about that good mega NBA. That's dedicated to my man Ron. We will talk about the Wizards preseason game against the Chicago Bulls. It got real feisty. It's the Urban Sports Saint.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hi, this is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'ma smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
We've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why.
You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
Poor Lil Jon.
Turn down for what?
Oh, we're back from commercial break. It's the Urban Sports Thing.
Alright.
Here to talk that Washington Wizards preseason basketball.
See, you gotta get into it, man. It'll be here. Halloween will be here in no time, and that's when the NBA season starts. Even though I know a lot of people really don't pay attention to the NBA until after the
Super Bowl.
People start paying attention around Christmas because, you know, you had the Christmas games, which are like the highlight games. That's the thing that's on Christmas for you to watch. Mm-hmm. But most people don't really get into it until after the Super Bowl because that's like when it's, I think, like 40 or 50 games left. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, as I stated, I love NBA basketball, especially the style of basketball they're playing now, a little bit more open. And so I'm really excited.
Wide open. Busted wide open.
So I'm really excited for the season to start and, you know, the preseason started to kick off. So I actually caught some of the Wizards and Bulls game last night, which turned kind of feisty.
Is it a rivalry, though?
I can't say it's a rivalry because rivalries, you play games that mean something. For big stakes, even though, you know, in last year's playoff, the Wizards beat the Bulls 4-1 in the first round, you still haven't played for anything really meaningful yet. If it were a second round, then yeah, but not in the first round. So I can't say it's a rivalry just yet.
So what did you catch in the game? What was cool in the game?
I like what Paul Pierce is going to bring to this team. I like the fireness, the fiery leadership. It's not like overly blah, blah, you know, Roddy leadership, but he provides that veteran leadership, that steady hand when, you know, when things are going to get tough for him. He'll be someone that can lead, show these young guys how to win. So I'm impressed with him. Gortat, I think Gortat's going to be in for another he's going to be in for a double-double year this year. And also John Wall. Don't be surprised if John Wall averages 20 and 11 this year.
Oh, wow. 20 and 11.
I'm setting the bar high. Don't be surprised if he – well, 20 and 10. 20 and 10. Right, I don't want to go 10. Too overboard, but right. 20 and 10 for John Wall.
All right. We all know Glenn Rice Jr. had an awesome summer league. Him and Otto Porter had a good summer league. Let's talk about Glenn Rice Jr. He had a good game last night. I think he had like 18 points. Is this going to be a nice year for him? It seems like he's looking like he's trying to ascend.
Yeah, he's starting to shoot it more and more like his daddy. He looks like he's starting to take that learning curve. It's not starting to ascend as much. It's starting to flatten out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's at a fairly decent level. He looks like he's going to be a guy that's going to be able to sustain a nice 7-8. Maybe 9-year NBA career, you know, with his ability to shoot the ball. He looks more aggressive on the offensive end, and he could be another weapon off of that bench for the Wizards and, you know, hopefully help them make a push for a top-four playoff spot.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to be a flat-out knockdown shooter like his dad. So I believe he has like 6 threes or something like that in the game.
Yeah, something 6 threes. Like that.
So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he's going to be utilized for this team on the bench. And, you know, sometimes you see guys who kill in preseason and they don't really see the clock that you think they should see.
Yeah, or you see guys who kill in the summer league like Otto Porter and they just didn't transcend over to game one of the preseason.
Yeah, 1 for 10. One for 10. But you know what? For Otto Porter, the positive I see out of that I seen in that situation, he took 10 shots.
That's the one positive that I saw. He was far more assertive. He wasn't as timid.
Yeah.
He was looking to create things and not let things come to him, which I think is a good thing. You know, if he keeps putting up the shots,
they'll fall.
They'll start to fall. And you just, Otto Porter, last year he looked like a guy who was lost and didn't have any confidence. To me, I'm very happy to see him put up those 10 shots, even though it's a preseason game, because that lets me know that he has the confidence to to confidence in himself to be like, I'm one of those guys.
Yeah, and if you watch Otto Porter for all his career, you know he's really passive a lot. You know, even in Georgetown, he was passive to a point where, obviously, his last year, he decided to be more aggressive. But then that's because of the necessity for the team. So if you know Otto Porter's game and you see, okay, he's taking 10 shots. He took 10 shots. I'm like, wow, that's good. That's a good thing. Because you want Otto Porter to be aggressive, to feel that he belongs, that he's a star. And if he can feel that way, he can be an effective basketball player for the Wizards. Otto Porter does more than he does more than scoring. He's not a prolific scorer by any stretch of the imagination, but he's a guy who fills the box sheet.
He's a utility guy.
Exactly. So if he's aggressive, that's a good thing. That's just going to trickle down for other things for him to do on the basketball court. So I'm for it. I know 1 for 10, it looks bad, but Wizards fans, believe this. Him being aggressive is a good thing, especially in preseason. If you're seeing that aggression, he will be fine. It's all about confidence for Otto Porter.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
All right, let's go. So let's go to the other side of the Bulls. Derrick Rose is out there. He looked explosive.
He looked extremely explosive. I had been following him during the FIBA games this summer. The Bulls are a far more exciting team with him in the lineup and him being back to his old self. And also the highlight clips on ESPN and all the other sports shows are far more better with him when he's able to convert some of those explosive plays. So I'm excited for him. I'm excited to see the Bulls and the Wizards play some meaningful games this year, both with healthy teams. I can't wait to get it on.
Man, I can't wait too, man. Because I want to see Derrick Rose, one of my favorite ball players in basketball, McBuckets. I want to see how that's going to work. That's my dude, man.
I'm more interested to see the how he plays off of Paul Gasol.
They look good. They look good together.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they both play off of each other. So that in itself is cool. So I can't wait to see that. But let's talk about Paul's old team, the Lakers, who had a aging star, one of the superstars of this league, Kobe Bryant, made his return to the lineup against Denver in a preseason game. How do you think Kobe looked?
I think Kobe was Kobe. He's savvy. He was hitting his fadeaway. He's like 5 for 12.
Well, not that first one.
Yeah, not that.
Air ball.
He's 5 for 12 from the field. We're talking. I mean, but he's Kobe. He was aggressive. So that's again, he took 12 shots. So he's Kobe. He's still a scorer. That's good for Laker fans. I was excited to see Julius Randle did some exciting things out there against the Nuggets. He scored, I believe, 10 points and whatnot. Had a monstrous dunk. Nice little reverse side play. He's just, people compare him to Zach Randolph. He's just a guy who's just explosive. He's an explosive Zach Randolph, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, they play a similar style because they're both lefties. They both like to bang, and they both like to shoot over their right shoulder with that kind of that half one-handed hook. But it's going to be a long season for Lakers fans. I'm just interested to see Swaggy P come back to the lineup because I would love to see Kobe and Swaggy P on the floor together. That's going to be both guys who just don't want anyone else to touch the ball and they're going to jack up shots. So it'll be interesting to see how they get along on the play off each other on the floor. As I stated, I think this Lakers team personally is a 35-win team at best.
So you don't think they're a playoff team with Kobe?
Hell no.
Okay, I don't believe so either. But, hey, it's always a lottery pick, Lakers fans.
Yep.
And a lottery pick means that there's more growth for potential.
Yep.
And for me, that's even better. When Kobe retires, I'm back in L.A. as a fan and looking for another face for the organization. Randall and the young kid for next year. Whoever that's going to be, I don't know. Steve Nash, you rave with money. I like you, though. I like you for your style. Steve Nash is my dude.
Yeah, Steve Nash said, I'm getting all of his money. I'm not retired. What?
I love Steve Nash because he's real. Yeah. Every time, I mean, and this is not to be, this is not a race thing, but I want to be real. Anytime a black dude does it, it's like, this dude greedy. When a white dude does it, it's like awesome to me. Because he's like one of us, right? So I ain't going to lie, he's like one of us. He like one of us, though, seriously. He's like, yeah, I'm about my money.
Yeah.
Usually everybody's like, we're about the team. Like you always get like the white connotation, like, all right, a white player is about his team, his teammates, he'll sacrifice. But Steve Nash wanted me. He's like me.
Steve Nash said, look, I went through a divorce. I'm getting paid $9 million this year. I don't care if I have to drag myself to the finish line. I am playing, and I am collecting all $9 million of my check.
Yeah, pass me my check. Cut the check. Ninjas. Yes, sir. Ninjas. That's what I said. I want to make sure y'all know that. I said ninjas. Anyway, tonight's games. Andrew Wiggins has made his debut tonight. Matter of fact, it's 7. Already passed. I'm about to check out the stats real quick. Go ahead.
Okay.
But y'all, as excited about Andrew?
Yeah, I'm excited. I think he should have never left Cleveland because I think he...
That's LeBron's fault.
Well, no. I think for a championship team, he was that missing piece, which was an elite or above average wing defender. And if you look at that Cleveland team, Ray Allen just opted in, so he'll be signing with Cleveland.
What's a rumor? Think it's, is it official?
It's 97%.
Okay. About to say,
he met
sure.
with David Blatt, and he's 90.
It, we got to make sure. We got
to, yeah. They said most likely.
Wiggins at 18.
Which was good in his preseason debut as he leads that young Wolves team. But it and we'll had this. I'm sure we'll have this discussion mm-hmm. during the NBA season. But there are two things that's going to keep this Cleveland team from being a bona fide championship team, which is a rim protector and a guy who can defend on the wing that can take some of the pressure off LeBron. Andrew Wiggins was that piece that could defend on the wing at his young part of his career. I know you get Kevin Love, who's a monster on the boards and who can spread from that forward position, which you need with LeBron. But I think you gave up a huge piece in Andre Wiggins. And that's also a guy who has the potential to develop to be that anchor after LeBron has retired and left.
No, I'm with you. I'm happy to see that he was dropping buckets, though. I'm not going to lie. 18 points of Wiggins. He gets to be, what I told you before, he's on a sorry team. So that means it's going to force him to be a star player. And it's going to force
the franchise.
Yeah, it's going to force him to take on ownership for that team. And it's going to make him be that alpha dog. So I'm happy for Andrew Wiggins. The second game that I actually wanted to talk about was, the Heat played the Orlando Magic tonight. Right now, I'm looking at the stats. Dwayne Wade has dropped 11 points. Chris Bosh has 18. Luol Deng has 18 as well.
Well, that's their Miami's new big three. Yeah. Minus LeBron, add in Luol Deng, who has a little bit of African in him, as Danny Ferry said.
Because we be raping you money in the records, ninjas!
Well, I'm excited to see that how that Heat team gels, and specifically how they play in the first round of the playoffs, because they're not going to be an easy out, not by far.
Not at all.
I also want to see Dwayne Wade's progress. Does he play 82 games? Does Spoelstra sit him some nights? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he took I think he only played like 54 regular season games last year because he had LeBron. So, you know, he'll have to shoulder more of the load offensively this year. So it'll be interesting. Like I said, I can't wait for the NBA season to start.
I can't wait either. Real quick, this is the last topic to talk about. Melo, he said he's the most underrated superstar. Do you agree, Carmelo Anthony?
No, because thus far you haven't taken your team outside of the first round of the playoffs.
So he's not an underrated superstar?
No, he's not.
It's not. Oh, so you don't think? I think he's underrated. I think Melo doesn't get credit for stuff he's done.
I don't think
He took the Denver Nuggets his rookie year to the postseason, a terrible team, and took him to the postseason. Took him to the Western Conference Finals too as well. Melo is a leader. Not every superstar wins a championship.
No, I'm not saying because he hasn't won a championship. That doesn't put him up. I'm just saying that he doesn't have a track record of continuously taking those teams to long runs in the playoffs. And when you think of your superstars, they at least get their team to the second round of the playoffs consistently. Melo hasn't done that. Now, although Melo hasn't had a lot of help, I will say that, but I don't think he's underrated. I think everyone gives him the accolades as probably being, if not number one, 1A or 1B offensive player in the league.
That's true. Well, anyway, real quick, the Nationals are up. Not up. The Nationals and the Giants are tied at 0. So it's scoreless. They didn't score in the first inning. So hopefully the Nats pull it out, pull this game out.
Stop saying hopefully, man. The Nets will pull it out.
They will pull it out. Okay, you just said
pull
it.
Out.
You just said that. You said it. I ain't saying
it. I did.
The man. But real quick, I want to give a shout-out to my man Dylan Smith. He had a comment saying that about the Nets. As far as GL, Giants look a little too hot to handle. So he's saying he's pretty much putting doubt out there for the Giants, for GL to pull it out. Damn, really, Wally? Pull it out?
Yeah.
To pull it out, I don't care. To pull it out against the Giants. So there's some doubt out there. But, hey.
That's Dylan, why they play the game.
That's why they play the game. And Dylan, you know, you're O's fan. So let's go O's. Again, another O shout out. Anyway.
Hey, another shameless plug.
Exactly. All day, every day. Bird gang. Anyway, go ahead. You want to read?
Oh, no, go ahead.
We'll do a quick read before we sign off for the show. Make sure you listen to us on our official Urban Sports Scene website, which is www.walio.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled podbean.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com.
All right. Once again, we want to thank you all for listening to us. You know, we're sports fans just like you. That's why this is one of the most dangerous podcasts around, because we're fans like you. We give you all a voice. We have a voice. Yeah. Whenever the people have a voice, that's dangerous.
You're right. It is dangerous.
You don't have any corporate agenda, no financial backing from no entity. Say whatever the hell you want. No repercussions.
You darn skip, eh?
You're going to always get the truth with us. So we appreciate you all. Thank you for listening to us, and we'll see you next week.
We out.
Peace. Take us out, Ron.